there's 350 planes, and with that overwhelming force, only six U.S. aircraft actually got up.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and, of course, amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we have a different topic, actually. Something a little bit different than we normally have. It wasn't my idea at all. And
I was just tired of listening to you talk about yourself.
Thanks so much. So we're going to go with the flow today, or at least I'm going with the flow. Carson prepped and got ready for this, and I had no idea up until about 5 minutes ago.
Surprise!
Surprise for me. Oh,
speaking about surprises.
What about a surprise?
Oh, this podcast topic that we're talking about, total surprise.
It was a total surprise on America in 1941. What are we talking about today?
Talking about Pearl Harbor.
Oh, wow. And why would we be talking about that on an aviation podcast?
We're talking about it because it's coming up on anniversary of it, December 7th. And when this podcast comes out, it's going to be the 5th. So I figured it'd be a good timeline to talk about it. There was actually a lot of aviation involved, and we never talk about something, you know, historical and interesting and the big impacts that it had. So I thought it'd be a pretty cool episode to do.
Fantastic. Let's get a brief overview. So Pearl Harbor took place on December 7th, 1941, when Japan launched a surprise attack. That's why we said surprise. Surprise.
That's awful.
I am a terrible dad joke today, especially on a Pearl Harbor. Yeah, I guess that's not in good taste, I guess. But
I think we've talked enough about military that everyone knows we love them. It's okay.
That is a true story. It's a true story. Well, they launched a surprise attack on the U.S. Naval base in Hawaii called Pearl Harbor. In just 2 hours, Japanese aircraft severely damaged Pacific Fleet, sank or crippled multiple battleships, and destroyed hundreds of aircraft on the ground. The attack marked a very looming point. That is a nice word. I like that one. Looming point in world history, bringing the United States into World War Dos. Or two, if you are speaking English today, and forever changing the role of American air power in modern warfare.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most significant, actually, aviation-driven events in history. The attack just showed just how much air power any country could have and how it could change the course of anything. In this case, it was World War II. It really changed the course of it, and not in a good way for them, as we all, you know how it turns out. But it was a terrifying attack. And as far as the aviation part goes, there's a lot that we can learn, especially as just general aviation pilots, situational awareness, communication, readiness, and understanding what your aircraft can actually do. So talking about Pearl Harbor really just helps connect the history of it. And I love history. I'm a history buff. And knowing what your plane can do with modern aviation and seeing what these older planes can do. I mean, you know, I love warbirds and actually getting to see you. Some of the planes that were in Pearl Harbor, at least the models that were flying, mm-hmm. I love it. And I love connecting the past to the present like that.
I know. I love history. And that was probably the one class in school that I actually did pretty well with.
Did you study for those tests or did you cram too?
I never studied for anything, actually. I never studied nor crammed. I just paid attention in class and whatever I got.
Well, you're here now.
So I was a terrible student. Terrible student.
I was a decent student, but look at us sitting in chairs next to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. What happened there?
C's get degrees, baby.
C's get degrees. And in both of our case, no degree yet. For you, coming soon. For me, never is going to happen. There's no reason for it for me. My degree is in aviation.
Nice. A lot of people actually have aviation degrees, and I think that they might just be offended by what you're saying there.
They probably are offended by what I'm saying.
That's stolen valor, I think.
Maybe it's stolen valor. But I'm not going to steal any valor of this episode. So the timeline of the attack, I know this is a weird episode because we're talking about war and heinous things done to the American people by the Japanese back then, who hated us. And today, we're great friends. It was really amazing to go into a country, by the way, because I went to Japan last year. Go to a country, and I went to Vietnam the year before that. It's really a trip to go to a country.
You going to Germany next year? Or?
No, exactly. Maybe I should. Or Iran or Russia. I don't know. I should
go somewhere interesting.
North Korea, maybe?
Yeah. You can do that.
Yeah.
I think Cuba is a little more realistic.
Yeah, Cuba would be nice, too.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I can do Cuba. It was really a trip going to these countries where, like, Americans fought and died at.
And now everything's normal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Vietnam wasn't quite normal because it's still a communist country. But Japan was very normal and very respectful. And there was no hard feelings about us dropping an atomic bomb on them. At least it didn't feel like it.
Two of them.
Yeah. But that's the ending to this story, by the way, the bomb, which we all know, right? So it began at 7:55 a.m. on December 7th, 1941, which that means it would have been 11 a.m. Pacific or 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's pretty late in the day for the rest of America.
Yeah, it was. But Hawaii's, I never think about it, but our whole country spans over six hours of time zones. It's Hawaii is 3 hours behind California.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. It's a lot. But that first wave, there was about 180 planes that just came out of nowhere. There were six aircraft carriers. And you never think about how massive aircraft carriers are because, you see planes at your local airport and your airfield, and you just see maybe 20, 30 of them, and you're like, wow, that's a lot of planes. These aircraft carriers, six of them had 350 planes on them. It was a lot. It's a lot of firepower.
On all these aircraft carriers?
Total, 350 planes total.
Wow.
Yeah, across six aircraft carriers.
Wow. How far away were they? Do you know?
I don't know, but they were...
close enough for them to fly there.
Close enough to fly there. Yeah.
And a lot of them didn't fly back.
I know. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. But that first wave just started striking the battleships and the airfields, making sure that no other planes could really come up and get out. And a second wave followed about an hour later, targeting more ships and military installations on the actual islands itself. But the whole thing only lasted 2 hours. By 9:45 a.m., the attack was over.
Wow. I imagined it like days long.
No, it was 2 hours, just quick in and out. And throughout the whole thing, there's 350 planes. And with that overwhelming force, only six U.S. aircraft actually got up. So I think we're going to get to it in a little bit too. But that really takes a lot to have your aircraft that ready and being able to actually get to it quick enough. I mean, 2 hours. Think about how long a pre-flight takes for a student pilot.
I mean, it takes a while.
And these aircraft are, always ready, but a lot of them were on lockdown. So they had these lockdown procedures in place because you're not going to just leave aircraft laying around unsecure. And that was the reason it took so long for any of these planes to actually get up. And by that time, the Japanese had actually already gotten to the planes, bombed the airfields. So almost nothing was able to get up. The aircraft were all parked, wing to wing, and defenses weren't fully manned because we weren't in the war. No one was expecting it. So these aircraft were able to just wreak havoc on the entire airfield and all of Pearl Harbor.
Wild. So there were a lot of aircraft. And I want to talk about one thing, Carson, actually, with all of that. In Mitsubishi, Japanese Zero. And I actually have some fun fact, a little fun fact. If any of you have watched different comedy shows, a little fun fact.
What's that from?
Dane Cook. Oh. Yeah, he's probably born. Yeah, he probably came out like that with that show before Carson was born. Yeah, most likely. You don't even know who Dane Cook is.
No.
No. Well, he looks like Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, I love Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, he's just not. Oh. He just looks like him. So this Mitsubishi Zero, I know where one is at. In the U.S.
I know where a couple are at, and it's at the bottom of Pearl Harbor. But where's the one that you're talking about?
At the Plains of Fame Air Museum in Chino.
No way.
Yep.
They have an actual Zero.
And it's flyable. It's flyable. I don't even know how they got that, because most of the Zeros took off and went.
I like watching documentaries about World War II. And a lot of these guys, they would pump them full of drugs, and then they would weld them shut, so they had no option but to not return.
No way.
Yeah. So there was zero alternative. They just
zero alternative.
Oh man, I'm so sorry, everybody. but these Zeros, they're super maneuverable and long range fighters. So they didn't have to be super close with their actual aircraft carriers. They were just able to take off and fly, and they had a set amount of fuel because there was no expectation that they would return. There was a used all of your bullets, used all your bombs, and then you are the bomb. It's
like, now it's time to go crash.
Yeah. And then they had torpedo bombers as well. You want to talk about those?
Torpedo bombers. You tell me about the torpedo bombers.
Yeah. They would strike the battleships. They would just dive in, pull up a little bit, and drop their torpedo. And they sunk, I don't even know how many battleships. I don't have that number, but.
Really?
And that's what was actually taking out these all the ships that were parked in Pearl Harbor.
Oh, it wasn't the Zeros?
The Zeros definitely did a lot of damage, but the actual planes with the purpose of destroying our ships was the Nakajima B-59, the Kate. That was the torpedo bomber. And they also had another one. It was the dive bomber, the Aichi D-3A. And that was the dive bomber. That
also
was
affectionately known as Val.
Yeah, it sounds a lot nicer than, I don't speak Japanese, so I'm so sorry for butchering that. But these things would just, come from a high altitude, dive straight down. They'd be able to line up exactly where they want on the ship, drop their bombs, pull up, and just fly away. And again, there was so little preparation for an attack because surprise attacks happen for a surprise. People actually couldn't get anywhere to the ships, to the guns, to actually take these planes down. So they had about 2 hours to just run around and just destroy everything. The U.S. aircraft, though, you do sound effects for movies. They would love it.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brain.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show. Carson, you know what's also awesome today?
What?
The planes that shot down the other planes. Do you know what one of those might have been?
What was it?
A P-40 Warhawk.
Those things look really cool. I like that all the aircraft in World War II, at least most of them, were all tailwheel. Because I feel like that's kind of a lost skill for a lot of pilots. You have a tailwheel, but you're not current.
Oh, thanks for mentioning it. Reminding me.
Of course. You have a fan that's reached out to you telling you need to be more current in your 120. You've yet to do it.
So I know. She's totally right. I need to email her back, by the way.
Yeah, there's a good reminder.
Thanks.
But the P-40 Warhawk was, most associated with the defense. So anytime you see any documentaries, that's the plane that you're going to actually see. But the other one was my favorite of all the warbirds, was the B-17. 17 is my lucky number. But it was the B-17 Flying Fortress. And some of them actually arrived to Pearl Harbor during the attack.
What?
Yeah.
Did they bomb the...
No, there wasn't much they could do.
There were no bombs there.
Yeah, there wasn't much they can do. It was all of their planes. And that's, it's a flying fortress. So it's known for being a fortress. There was guns all over it. But there wasn't much that it could do. So this kind of stayed away for the most part. And the other one was the Douglas SPD Dauntless. And I'm just saying it's not really associated with Pearl Harbor, but it was really key in the Pacific afterward. And that was flown a lot. And I've actually seen a couple of them. There's only very few, but I saw one at Sun and Fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was cool.
I wonder how much they cost.
A lot.
A lot?
A lot.
A lot, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, try and buy a Corsair. There's only four left, I think.
Really? Is that all their Corsairs are?
Flyable, I think four and total 10.
No way. Yeah, Carson knows his warbirds. I don't know anything about warbirds except for, here's a fun fact, a little fun fact. I had a T-28, actually, trainer for a little while.
It looks a little bit like the Dauntless.
Dauntless is way more sexy.
Come on. It's an actual warbird, not a trainer. But the trainer, how fast did that thing go?
It was 200 and something knots.
Yeah, it was.
I never got to fly it.
You got to taxi it.
I taxied it all the time.
I got to sit in it. It was just kind of scary getting up there. Got things.
You had to climb up the
wing, and then like onto the wing, then get in the plane. It's high.
Super cool.
It was really cool. I got a couple pictures. But anyway, tying this actually in, because I know a lot of us have heard about Pearl Harbor our whole lives, at least in the U.S. It's talked about a lot. And tying it into general aviation, I think the biggest thing is situational awareness. For student pilots, there's continuous observation, the weather, traffic, radio. But I mean, imagine 350 planes flying in unison with one mission in mind, to destroy the U.S. fleet in Pearl Harbor. How much communication there had to be to make planes not hit each other? I mean, you don't have ATC in the middle of the ocean, right?
I would say you're talking a lot and you're also looking outside a lot, just nonstop, like our VFR pilots should be doing today. Because although ADS-B is required, quote unquote, everywhere, it is not actually required everywhere. And it's actually not required in more places than it is actually required.
Yeah. And if you think about it, any airplane taking off from an untowered airport, there's no way to check if their ADS-B is even on and functional.
As long as they're, I guess that's true on every airplane, but if you're outside of a Mode C/ADS-B veil.
You don't need it, but think about it. They can take off and it wouldn't even be functional. They wouldn't know it.
And they wouldn't know. Yeah, you're right.
So situational awareness, because even if you think you have ADS-B, it might not be working. And ADS-B has gone out before. It's happened to me. And the tower had to, work with me to pick me up and find out where I'm at and actually get visual line of sight on me instead of having me on the radar.
Or sometimes you lose your Mode C because your encoder goes out. By the way, it's just a little box that gets connected in between in your static system, and the encoder can go out as well. And that means your transponder will not tell them altitude. It'll just say that you are there, and you can be anywhere there from 1 foot to 1 million feet in the air.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I used to show people that encoder on stage techs. Yeah.
I haven't seen one.
Really? Well, I'll show it to you at the airport sometime.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, situational awareness is key. I mean, being able to fly around any other planes, if you've gone to any busy airport or any traffic pattern, any training area, you'll understand exactly how many planes can be in one spot at once. And big part of that is just cross-checking information. You might have them on your iPad on ForeFlight and be able to see where all those planes are at, but actually getting a line of sight on them is key. And that's why, when ATC tells you, hey, there's a plane 9 o'clock, 1 mile out, this altitude, you have to actually tell them that you have them in sight. You can't just say, yep, I have them on my ForeFlight. I see them.
Yeah. And some people say, I've got them on the fish finder.
Oh, yeah.
Pilots love to say that. I hate that one. By the way, it means nothing. If you tell a controller, hey, I've got them on ADS-B, or I've got them on my iPad, or I've got them on the fish finder, you know what that means for them? Zero. Nothing. Doesn't mean that they can let that go and say, oh, glad they have a visual on it, because they don't. So the controllers can't do anything about that. So don't even tell it to them. You just say looking, searching, whatever you want, whatever word you want to use. But don't tell them you have sight of it on ADS-B. That means nothing.
Yeah.
I was watching an airplane on ADS-B the other day when I did my Thanksgiving flight, and I saw this plane. It looked really, really close on ADS-B. And then when I finally saw it outside, it was like 4 miles away. It was like this little baby dot.
Yeah. Scale is a big thing.
It was a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I made that mistake as a student pilot. I was looking for an airplane. It was actually on my cross-country solo. I was looking for an airplane, couldn't find him. And I was like, well, I see him on my ADS-B, but I can't find him. He's like, okay, well, you have to let me know when they're in sight. And that's how I knew that, it wasn't an acceptable answer, because that's not something that you're taught. You think logically, I see him here, so that's probably good enough. It's not. You need to have a line of sight and actually have him with your eyes outside the plane for it to be acceptable. And that's just safety. It's basic safety. But the other part I wanted to talk about was communication. Any breakdown in communication, like in Pearl Harbor, contributes to a big surprise. And
surprise,
surprise! For Pearl Harbor, it was a really nasty surprise. But for you, that could be anything from weather to traffic to radio chatter. And I think weather is a huge thing to communicate, especially with ATC. I love asking ATC what the wind is, just so I'm very sure on how safe I can be. Because sometimes the wind is so variable and it has gusts, and ATC will just continue to read out the wind while you're coming in on really nasty days.
ATC or like tower control?
Tower, sorry.
Yeah, tower.
Tower.
Yeah, you can just say wind check and then ask for another wind check. I'm actually against that. I used to do the same thing, by the way. And when you're a younger pilot, I understand the reason for that. but you are going to control the airplane based on what the wind does, not what you expect it to be, right? So even if they say it's gusting at 15 or it's 7 gusting 15.
It might not gust the entire time you're landing.
It might not gust at all.
Yeah.
And it might be stronger than they expected or it might be less. It's not an exact science, right? It's just a snapshot of what it was 10 seconds ago or 30 seconds ago or a minute ago, whatever it might have been. So I just base the airplane on the feel of the wind. Like, how much aileron do I need to put in? How much rudder do I need to put in? How much back pressure do I need to put in? Or that, relieve?
That's a skill that you need to develop. And until then, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with asking. Yeah. It's just not going to do anything.
More information is always better.
I guess, as long as they're not busy.
Put yourself in student pilot shoes.
I would. I am.
Yeah. If they're busy, obviously it's not going to do much. But it was a big thing for me, actually, with overcoming my fear of wind shear and turbulence. Knowing that the wind really doesn't change that much and it's not going to change. Like, when you have that information, like Brian said, it's not going to change your input on what you're actually doing. But it did help me get over a lot of that anxiety with, because I had a bad wind shear one time and I was coming into land and I dropped like 30, 40 feet. It was scary. I didn't like it. So after that, I was asking for wind all the time and I eventually got to the point I was comfortable again. And we've talked about that hurdle on this podcast a million times.
You need to know what your plane can and can't do, especially within different weight envelopes.
Yeah. And I think that's a big thing. You know, with Pearl Harbor, they had obviously some pretty crazy weight that they're able to carry. These planes can carry, you know, lots of bombs, lots of missiles, lots of bullets, and lots of fuel. And the same weight and balance principles apply no matter what plane you're flying, no matter big or small. Weight and balance is always going to be something you have to be considering. And understanding what your plane can do, and especially how the weather's going to affect it, I think density altitude is a good lesson. Obviously, Pearl Harbor, it's, you know, ocean
sea level. In the winter.
In the winter, yeah, no less. But understanding the density altitude and how it's going to affect your mission is huge. That's not something I learned until I tried to fly to Big Bear.
Really?
I was trying to get up to about 10,000 feet in a Cessna 172, and I found out how long that takes in the summer.
How long did it take?
I couldn't do it. It took months.
Yeah. So one other thing I want to mention is VNE. What does VNE stand for?
Never exceed speed.
Never exceed speed. By the way, do you know what the V stands for?
Speed.
It stands for velocity. If anybody didn't know.
Oh, that makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah, it stands for velocity.
It's not something that's come up. I've always just replaced it in my head with speed. Like when you see LOL, you see laugh out loud. Not.
Or if you're really old, you might think it means lots of love.
Aww.
My mom used to think that.
I saw
that. Your mom used to think that too. Actually, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, probably. I get a text, hey, your grandpa died, LOL. Lots of love.
Lots of love, yeah. Say a little different. All right, now back to this. So VNE, this never exceed speed is really there to keep you extremely safe. And now, granted, most people don't even get into the yellow line. I will if the air is smooth and the aircraft can take it. But I know a lot of people that never even fly in the yellow arc. And most aircraft can't, well, I'm not going to say most aircraft, but most general aviation aircraft cannot even get to the yellow arc unless you are in a nose down attitude with some power or even without power, but it's in a nose down attitude. And if you've ever seen a plane crash and they just start like getting torn to pieces, literally in the air, it's because they reached that VNE speed.
And that's what happens at VNE. It's really insane to watch. But like when the wings rip off and like the tail rips off, like in these, you know, dramatic reenactments of even Pearl Harbor, there's plenty of pictures and videos of planes falling apart. And because dive bombers are a very particular kind of plane that have a very high VNE, most planes can't do that. So when you see those videos, that's what happens when you exceed VNE. Not really a concern for most of the missions that we actually do as general aviation pilots, but it's an insane thing to see happen. And there's a reason that you try and stay from that never exceed line, because it will literally tear the plane apart. The plane can only handle a certain amount of velocity.
Yeah, it can. And I think this actually makes a lot more sense in weather as well. Have you ever been in a downdraft?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Downdraft can force your airplane down at a rapid speed, 1,000 or 2,000 feet per minute, or even more, or especially if you get in a microburst or something, that can tear your aircraft apart because it will make your aircraft travel at a lot higher speed and you can get your aircraft torn apart. That's what we talked when we talked about thunderstorms the other week. We were kind of referencing some of that type of stuff, and that's what could go really, really wrong.
So, microbursts are a whole other beast we should talk about at some point.
Yeah, we can talk about microbursts at some point
too. Crazy.
And the reason why we stay so far away from them and how airlines have changed their procedures on them, et cetera, due to a crash, I believe that was in Dallas. If it wasn't in Dallas, it was somewhere in Texas.
Sounds right.
Yeah, we'll do another episode on that at some point soon. But I think it's time to wrap it up for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us or watching us. If you're watching us on YouTube, we really, really, really appreciate it. Hope you liked our little history lesson today, along with some of our notes on aviation safety and how it ties to general aviation.
Yeah, and I think it was a really cool episode. I like talking about history, and not all the facts are perfect. We're doing this a little bit off of memory, but I love history, and I love the Warbird section of any air museum, any air show. Seeing like the history flights are incredible, just to see how far anything aviation related with technology has happened in 75 years.
By the way, they're doing the DC-3 Festival of Lights over Riverside again.
That's a really cool thing.
They didn't do it last year. They're doing it this year. So if you're in SoCal, you can go do that at Riverside Airport. I would highly recommend getting tickets and going on it. It's not a very long flight. It's 15 minutes, but you get to fly on a DC-3 and go look at Christmas lights from above and fly over the Mission Inn, which is highly decorated and beautiful.
Yeah.
Go check it out.
Two cool things happening at the same time. It's awesome.
Exactly.
Oh, there was another thing that we missed. I think it was up in Palm Springs, the Air Museum. There was an F-117.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My dad sent me a video. He was rubbing it in my face because we had plans that day.
That sucks.
But it was there was some really cool things there, and it led me to a couple other posts, and I went down a rabbit hole. But I think I saw that at AirVenture in 2026, Doc is going to be there.
I've seen Doc several times, and Fifi.
You saw Fifi?
I haven't seen it lately, but I've seen both.
I saw Doc on the way to the Pacific Air Show this year.
Oh, wow.
On my way to the air show driving, and it was flying over Corona.
I think I saw it too.
Yeah. That was incredible.
It was neat. Well, cool. Thank you so much again for listening or watching us today. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails. If you don't have it by now, please listen to another episode so you can grab it. One a couple episodes ago, guarantees to have it. If not, reach out to us on LinkedIn. Just look for me, Brandon Martini, or Carson Vasquez. We're the most beautiful ones at the top of the list whenever you search our names. I know Carson's face is like, I don't know about that. I know it's true for me, maybe not for him. Also, don't forget to hit like, follow, subscribe, share all the awesome things you're supposed to do on social media or on YouTube. It really, really, really helps us grow the podcast. And more importantly, helps us help more people in the aviation community. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody. And as we wrap up for the day, remember, here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See you.